But right now, I'm very honored to welcome to our program Christopher Viles, Director of American Studies and Associate Professor of English at the University of Connecticut. He's the author of the book Haunted by Hitler, Liberals, the Left, and the Fight Against Fascism in the United States. Professor Viles, thanks so much for making time to come on the program tonight.
Oh, thank you, Scott, for having me on.
And I wanted, first of all, to kind of set the stage for our discussion here this evening by noting what I think all of our listeners have observed, and that we've seen the toxic, racist, and hateful rhetoric of Donald Trump as he wins primary after primary and seems headed to win the Republican presidential nomination. We've seen the exhortations to violence by Trump himself at his rallies, where his supporters oblige by punishing, pushing, kicking, spitting on protesters who dare to peacefully dissent from Trump's campaign of hate and fear. And Professor Viles, you have said Trump's divisive campaign message is part of what you judge to be America's dark fascist tradition. And I wondered if you would discuss your opinion there of Trump and the category he's fitting into with this campaign.
Sure, sure. First of all, I guess I'd like to say that Trump is he's not a fully developed fascist in my view, but I would say he's far enough down that road that if you were to call him an actual fascist or the fascist candidate, you wouldn't really be wrong. And I say that because Trump basically, it's important to remember what fascism really is. And in my book, I argue that it has been a part of American life since the 1920s, and it's palpably impacted American democracy. And so Trump, in certain ways, or at least the fascist tradition, did not begin with Trump in the United States. But he does bring it to a new visibility and a new level of danger. For starters, fascism is really, it's a particular kind of right-wing politics, and it's not conservatism proper. I see conservatism proper as more about kind of elites preserving their economic interests or the well-to-do preserving their advantages, but it's not so much, fascism is not so much driven by economics or economic appeals. People who are drawn to kind of fascist appeals or the fascist message is more an emphasis on kind of strength, power, leadership, violence, nation, race. And its kind of core features are militarism or male violence, hard rejection of equality, anti-intellectualism, a disregard for constitutional democracy, racism, all of these things. So, I guess I see Trump as belonging at least to the fascist tradition, or at least being a fascist-minded politician, because though he has an economic platform, it's not really his emphasis. His emphasis is that language of strength, power, race, violence. He's also very authoritarian. He kind of personifies the strong man who wants to get things done without obeying the usual protocol. He's drawn to other strong men like Putin and even North Korea's Kim Jong-un. And he's, and it's also the street level racial violence that you mentioned, the street level racial violence that he basically brings out in his supporters and he condones. It's not really too much of a surprise to me that, organizations like the Ku Klux Klan and Stormfront and overtly pro-fascist groups are kind of drawn to his message.
Thanks for that, Professor Viles. As you noted in some of your writings, that Donald Trump has mixed populist ideas with the very clear message of scapegoating racial and religious groups for what's wrong with America. And I wonder if you would tell us the danger you see both in Trump's rhetoric, but also his success in seducing a large sector of the Republican Party to sign on to his agenda.
Yeah, what you're talking about with him kind of seducing a large number of people, it is quite frightening. One thing I like to say that on the danger of Trump, first of all, maybe a caveat, maybe backpedal a little bit from what I just said, is that Trump doesn't so far have kind of an organized fascist party per se, nor does, and it's not really clear that if, even though he's fascist minded, it's not really clear to me that he would actually, you know, create an American Fourth Reich or something like that if he was elected, because he would have to really change around the state apparatus in ways that he might not have the ability to do. He probably wouldn't. But nonetheless, he's dangerous to that extent, and he's dangerous because, I mean, much like kind of anti-fascist tradition on the left in both in Europe and the United States has really argued that the danger of fascists or the fascist-minded really arises from kind of underlining hierarchies and underlining anxieties that the system generates, the normal system generates, the status quo generates. So, for example, you know, we have a great deal of economic anxiety. We have even the mainstream Republican Party has stoked kind of the, you know, more kind of subtle kind of racism in its appeals. And so you've kept alive, you have a society that's kept alive so much economic insecurity. You have a society that's kept alive racism despite all of the gains of the civil rights movement. And so you still have this fertile ground for people like Trump to arise so long as you have those underlying problems.
Now, Professor Viles, I wondered if you would explain to our listeners the differences and divisions between fascist ideology and the standard conservative belief system that, of course, has been a feature of the Republican Party for many, many decades.
Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, I mentioned really briefly before that, you know, I see, you know, and others would probably disagree with me on this, but I mainly see kind of conservatism proper about kind of, you know, the wealthier, the well-to-do, securing their economic advantages. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be wealthy to be a conservative. It just means if you're conservative and if you're not wealthy, you probably don't have much of a problem with accumulated wealth, or at least there's this idea that, you know, the wealthy are the job creators and they'll share with me if they get the chance. But that said, that's the world I see of the world of the Bushes, the world of, you know, the Republican establishment, right? At least in the United States. I mean, but when you get to fascism or something along the lines of the hard right, you're not really dealing so much with a world of that emphasizes things like taxes or tax cuts. You're really in that world of kind of race, violence, nation, action. And so it really strikes me, for example, if you watch like a full thing of a Trump speech, he's a Republican candidate, and it's amazing how rarely he mentions the word taxes, right? Or even words like kind of liberty or freedom or things like this. And granted, politicians make a mockery of words like liberty and freedom, but when they disappear from someone's vocabulary, it's kind of scary too in its own way. So maybe I've kind of enunciated conservatism or what I see as that, but again, the fascist appeal, it really appeals to much more kind of darker currents that all cohere around things like nation, race, violence, right? That's in a nutshell in strength and power. And I think the what trips a lot of people up is that, at least a lot of academics, is that there's this expectation that someone to merit the fascist label has to look exactly like Hitler or Mussolini, and that's not really the case. I mean, you're really looking for something that's more of a functional equivalent, that has some underlying features, but we're never going to necessarily have exactly an exact repeat of a Mussolini or a Hitler. And truth be told, I don't think Trump, with all his racial violence, really is the kind of the Hitler strand. I mean, I think there's an argument out there that says he's more in the tradition of the kind of the Mussolini type fascism than the German type, and I agree with that.
We're speaking with Christopher Viles, Director of American Studies and Associate Professor of English at the University of Connecticut. We're talking about the intersection of Donald Trump's presidential campaign and the notion of fascism in U.S. politics, the history of it. And Professor Viles, there have been commentators who declare that Donald Trump is a creation of the Republican Party that was born out of the backlash that the party took advantage of among white voters against the civil rights movement when it emerged in the late 50s and 1960s. And over the decades, the Republican Party has engaged what many describe as dog whistle politics, appealing to white voters' racism in subtle and not so subtle ways over the years. And we can also look, we can look at Ronald Reagan and where he chose to kick off his 1980 election campaign. That occurred in Philadelphia, Mississippi, the town where civil rights workers Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman were murdered by white supremacists back in 1964. And take it forward to the silence of Republican Party leaders in the face of the birther movement that charged that President Obama was neither a citizen nor a Christian, as he professed, but was instead a covert Muslim. You combine that with the unrelenting attacks and disrespect to the nation's first African-American president, and you can see pretty clearly that there are links between the Republican Party's recent history and the popularity of Donald Trump. I'm not sure if you agree or disagree, but I thought I'd throw that out there for comment.
No, I actually completely agree with that. And in fact, you were talking about that the Trump kind of grows out of this kind of racial backlash or this, you know, in certain ways, you know, what we might call the Southern strategy of the late 60s or the early 70s, in this particular racial strand of Republican rhetoric. And I completely agree with that. In fact, in my book, I argue that George Wallace basically is also one of, it's also one of those kind of rare politicians that I would place in an American fascist tradition. And he was actually acknowledged as such even by William F. Buckley at the time. But, you know, Wallace is, you know, the candidate, third party candidate in 1968, 1972. But there are, he really is the kind of progenitor of, this particular kind of coded racial message of, you know, a white racial resentment, that comes out of and gets co-opted by the mainstream Republican Party, by Nixon, you know, in 68 and 72. And it kind of carries forward from then. But I mean, I think it's, with Wallace and kind of his tradition, I mean, if you look at that particular kind of right-wing populist figure, there's uncanny similarities between him and Trump, including the violence at rallies. And George Wallace rallies were similarly as the rallies today in, you know, 68 and the early 70s, were commented on for their violence. I mean, there was one particularly violent Wallace rally in October 1968 in Madison Square Garden in New York City, where you had beatings between a kind of anti-fascist protesters and Wallace can, you know, saying things like, you know, we don't have riots in Alabama. They start a riot down there. First one of them to pick up a brick, it's a bullet in the brain, things like that, right? And so again, it's that, in Wallace, again, I argue is part of that, you know, fascist tradition in the United States. And he also is not only that you can kind of trace the roots of that, not only the roots of Wallace, not only to, the legacy of Wallace, not only to, you know, this kind of Republican Southern strategy, but even to, in a way, like kind of the whole prison industrial complex, to the system of mass incarceration we have now. So I mean, these dark currents of American life basically have really impacted American politics at a number of critical junctures. And you know, time will tell if we're at one of those junctures right now.
Professor Viles, unfortunately, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I wondered if you would relate to our listeners, if you would, the best way the best way you can recommend that fascist and racist and scapegoatist ideology in U.S. politics can be effectively combated, and further to educate voters as to the danger of that brand of hate and fear that's really practiced by Donald Trump and other politicians.
Well, I mean, I guess the short answer would be racism doesn't really raise your wages any. but I guess the takeaway message, even though my book dealt with a lot of dark content, I guess the good news is that these kind of fascist types and these fascist figures have really been checked by a pretty vigorous anti-fascist tradition in American life. And this is pretty much ordinary people just getting involved, ordinary people forming social movements, and kind of, you know, either anti-racist movements or movements for tolerance or kind of anti-homophobic movements. These have been really kind of critical in American life. So, I mean, if ordinary people do not want to see a Trump or kind of a fascist figure, the way to, and I know we're all really busy, but the way to really check that is to get involved with grassroots movements at the local level. Because short of that, just the president itself or the Democratic Party itself left to its own devices, is not, or certainly not the Republican establishment, is just not going to stop this on its own.
Well, thanks so much for spending time with us, Professor Files. And is there a website you'd recommend to read some of your writings and get more information about the book?
I don't have a blog or anything like that, but the book is Haunted by Hitler, Liberals, the Left, and the Fight Against Fascism in the United States.
All right. Well, I appreciate you making time to be with us tonight and talking about this very important issue about U.S. politics. It's strange. A phenomenon that we've seen develop over these years that, as you say in the book, there's a history, but many of us today, years later, are not all that familiar with it. So thanks for being here to explain it to us, Professor Viles. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Scott.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Professor Christopher Viles at the University of Connecticut. His book, again, the title of which is Haunted by Hitler, Liberals, the Left, and the Fight Against Fascism in the U.S.